Welcome to Shir Targum in Parshas Bishalach. The Shir this evening is dedicated by Joel Bernstein, Gloria Goldenberg, marking the yard site of today of his mother, Sima Golda, Bas Rav Avram. Shalom Shadav and Aliyah should see much nachas ruach from the Torah mitzvahs and Maisim Tovim that the family are involved in. We left off yesterday with a very striking and we would say even puzzling translation of the Targum Yonason ben Uziel. So in Perek Yudalid Pasuk Gimel, so Klal Yisrael have left Mitzrayim, they've doubled back, they've encamped opposite the Yam Suf, and then the Pasuk says, "Va'omar Paro Levnei Yisrael Nevuchim Heim Ba'aretz Sagar Aleihem Amidbar." The way Rashi translates this Pasuk is Paro will say about Bnei Yisrael that they are confused in the land, and the desert has been closed upon them. In other words, you know, they're vulnerable, they're trapped. Now's the time to be able to go and to attack Klal Yisrael. Rashi makes the point of saying that even though the lamed, the prefix lamed, usually means two, so v'omar paro livnei Yisrael would normally be translated that paro said to bnei Yisrael. Here, says Rashi, Livnei Yisrael means Al Bnei Yisrael. The Lamed, you know, is translated a little bit atypically, means that Paro will say about Bnei Yisrael, not to Bnei Yisrael. It's very difficult to translate the Pasuk that he's going to say to Bnei Yisrael because they're not there. You know, Klal Yisrael have already left Mitzrayim, so it would be a little bit odd for Paro to be speaking to them if they're not there. But the Yonasan ben Uziel translates the Lamed in the conventional fashion and presents a very, very fascinating interpretation. So he writes, V'yemar paro l'doson v'la'aviram b'nei Yisrael d'mishtayrin b'mitzrayim. Doson and Aviram, the famous arch-villains that you know, make their appearance, you know, really once in the simple reading of the Psukim, but many, many times, you know, throughout the career of Moshe Rabbeinu, the way Chazal read the Psukim. So Dosan and Aviram, apparently, according to the Yonasan ben Uziel, did not leave Mitzrayim with the rest of the Jewish people. They stuck around. And apparently, it sounds like they stuck around in close vicinity, close proximity to Paro. Because when Paro realizes that the Jews have not gotten far, that they've basically gone but then doubled back and are now in front of the Yam Suf, Paro turns to Dosan and Aviram, who apparently are right in his vicinity. The Mishtairin bin Mitzrayim, they stayed in Mitzrayim. And when it says, Va'omar Paro Luvnei Yisrael, it means Paro said to those two members of Bnei Yisrael who were still there, he didn't say about Bnei Yisrael, he said to Bnei Yisrael, i.e., Dosan and Aviram, who were hanging around the court. I don't know what they were doing exactly, but, you know, when Paro was ready to say, okay, we should go chase the Jewish people, who was there but Dosan and Aviram? And he said to them, Hinon amo beis Yisrael ba'ara trad oleam tos tzvon nagoi demadbara. That Bnei Yisrael are they're confused in the land, and Baal Tzifon, that last remaining idol, that last remaining deity of the Egyptians, has closed off for them the light of the desert. And again, as we mentioned yesterday, this is a sort of a twisted way of looking at the phenomena of the Anon Yaakov. The Anon Yaakov, we know the clouds of glory, which according to the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel had already commenced with the Jewish people coming to the area known as Sukkos. That's when the Anon Yaakov began. So the Anon Yaakov were a tremendous bracha for the Jewish people. The clouds surrounded them, they protected them, they guided them. But looking from the outside, Paro said, hey, these people are wandering around in a perpetual mist. They're walking around in a fog. You know, the light has been snuffed out for them. And instead of seeing the phenomenon of the Anon Yaakov as being something incredibly positive and proof of divine intervention and divine protection of the Jewish people, Paro attributes the phenomena of the Anon Yaakov to Baal Tzifon, to the last remaining idol of the Egyptians. And he doesn't see it as a positive thing. He sees it as you know, something that's negative. Baal Tzifon has sucked out the light that surrounds the Jewish people. They're now surrounded by darkness, by cloud, by mist, by fog. And this is perfect. You know, they're confused. They're befuddled. They're surrounded by fog. Time to go and get the Jewish people. Now, the interpretation about, you know, what seems to be about the Anani Yaakov is fascinating in its own right, but what's particularly fascinating is this description of Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram don't leave Mitzrayim. They choose not to leave Mitzrayim, apparently. They choose to hang around with Paro, and they apparently enjoy such a close relationship with Paro that when Paro decides to go and chase after the Jewish people, who does he confide in? Dasan and Aviram. Why do you have to say anything to Dasan and Aviram altogether? Good, so they're these two crazy Jews who decided not to leave Mitzrayim and are hanging around the palace. Okay, good for them. Whatever military and political decisions you, Paro, are going to make wouldn't seem to need to involve these two Jews. What, you need Rishus? You need permission from Dasan and Aviram to go chase after the rest of the Jewish people? What are you talking to them all together? You know, two renegades. Right, so it's not unreasonable to assume that if they indeed went to Paro and told him about the killing of the Mitzri, which it sounds like they did, It doesn't say it 100%, but it sounds like they did that. It wouldn't be unusual to assume that they probably got promoted to some high position. In other words, you know, you went and snitched on Moshe Rabbeinu. Great, you know, we'll make you a lieutenant, and we'll make you. You know, we'll give you a ministry post, and we'll give you a ministry post. You know, everybody will, will be rewarded.
Last week's parsha, we learned that the Jews that didn't want to leave Mitzrayim were killed.
Okay.
So how come they're two alive?
So we left off with this question last night, right? No, so it's good, Thank you for being a plant in the audience. So how do you understand this phenomenon of Dasan Aviram, right? So we know there's a very famous medrash. Rashi quotes the beginning of this week's sedra, Chamushim Olu Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim. You know, only 20% of the Jews actually left Mitzrayim. The other 80% who had despaired of the Geula and did not believe in Moshe Rabbeinu, they died in Mitzrayim during the Makas Choshech, during the Plague of Darkness. If ever you could think of two Jews who did not believe in Moshe Rabbeinu, and even once the Jews leave Mitzrayim, say, sorry, we'd like to stick around. If ever there were candidates to die in Makas Choshech, you would think it would be Dasan and Aviram. So how is it that Dasan and Aviram survived the Makas Choshech and somehow, you know, are still hanging around, you know, advising Paro, and, you know, live all the way through Parshas Korach, when they finally meet their comeuppance, right? How did they get through the Makas Choshech? So, you know, one easy answer to the question might be Midrashim Chalukim, different opinions in the Midrash, right? You're always not sure, you know, how to reconcile to Midrashim. Okay, so there are different opinions in Chazal. Maybe the opinion in Chazal that says that 80% of the people died is not the same opinion that's quoted by the Onos Ben Uziel that says that Dasan and Aviram, you know, did not go out of Mitzrayim and stayed with Paro. That's always, you know, whether it's correct or not, it's always an easy knee-jerk reaction. How do you solve all the problems? Well, the two different shittas, the two different opinions, and they don't necessarily reconcile with one another.
These
are the same Dasan and Aviram who were referenced explicitly in the Torah Parshas Korach. According to Chazal, however, they are players on the scene long before Parshas Korach. They're the two people who are fighting with one another at Parshas Shmos. They're the two people at the end of Parshas Shmos are telling Moshe Rabbeinu, why'd you make life miserable for us by going to Paro and asking him to let the Jewish people go? you know, Asher Hivashtem Esrechenu, you made us look bad in the eyes of Paro. And, you know, later on in Parshas Beshalach, they're the ones who were going to make difficult times for Moshe Rabbeinu with the Mon. In other words, whenever something's going on in Klal Yisrael that seems to be challenging Moshe Rabbeinu, it seems like it's Dasan and Aviram who are involved in that. Right. So it's the same Dasan and Aviram that we're going to read about in Parshas Karach. So again, just going back to what we said before, so one, perhaps, overly easy way to answer the question, so why didn't Dasan Aviram die during the Makas Choshech, is to say, well, you know, there's one position in Chazal that talks about all of the non-believers died during Makas Choshech. There's a different position in Chazal that maybe doesn't accept that, has a different interpretation of Chamushim Olu B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Again, we, as we pointed out, there are different ways to interpret that pasuk. So maybe that other interpretation is the one that holds that Dasan Aviram they chose not to leave Mitzrayim, and that's position. I saw, however, very interesting, I thought a very creative approach from the Rabbi Dov Kramer, where he suggests the following way to understand this idea in the Yonasan Ben Uziel, based on a fascinating approach of Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky Zatzal. Rabbi Yaakov is not dealing with the question of Dasan and Aviram directly, but he's dealing with a very, very vexing question which has come up here before, and we might as well address this question, and then we'll see how Rabbi Kramer applies this idea of Rabbi Yaakov to this Yonasan ben Uziel regarding Dasan and Aviram. So we know that one of the sort of lurking questions in these past couple of parshios is, what was the request that Moshe and Aaron made of Paro? You say, what do you mean? What was the request they made of Paro? Let the Jewish people go. Well, not so clear. Go for how long, right? We've discussed this before. In the very, very beginning, in Perek Gimel, when the Ribbono Shalom appears to Moshe Rabbeinu at the Sneh, at the burning bush, so he tells him, go to Paro and request from him a 3-day Shabbaton, that Klal Yisrael should be allowed to go into the desert, offer up karbonos, and then come back. And that does seem to be the request when you go through the parshios. You know, Moshe and Aaron come to Paro at the very end of Parsha Shmos, and they say explicitly, we want to go into the desert for 3 days and offer up karbonos. So it sounds like that's the basis of the negotiations between Moshe and Aaron on the one hand, and Paro, not about emancipating the Jewish people, but basically giving them a Shabbaton. And so much of the back and forth centers on how big a Shabbaton it should be, right? Should we allow just the adults to go? Should the children be allowed to go? Maybe the people will go, but, you know, the cattle will have to stay in Mitzrayim. I mean, that's the back and forth. If you go through Parshios, you know, Vo'era and Bo. And again, as we talked about last week, in the beginning of Parshas Bo, Paro, according to many interpretations, says to Moshe and Aaron, I know what you're up to. I know that you're not just asking for a 3-day Shabbaton. I know that you're looking to break the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim altogether. I'm on to you. Re'u ki ra neged peneichem. The way the Targum Onkelos translates that pasuk, as explained by the Ramban, is, I know what you're up to. I can see through you, Paro says to Moshe and Aaron. Re'u ki ra neged peneichem. I see that you're planning something evil. I see that you're not being totally honest with me when you're asking about, you know, just a 3-day excursion into the desert. I see that you want to run away. And we get all upset, you know, when we hear Paro saying such terrible things to Moshe and Aaron. But then we kind of ask ourselves the question, but you know, he's right. You know, I mean, the truth is, what happened? They asked for a 3-day vacation, and then they broke out, and they never came back. So where's the honesty? Where's the integrity on the part of Moshe and Aaron? Or to even take it one step further, on the part of the Ribbono Shel Olam, who basically instructs Moshe and Aaron, go to Paro and ask him to give you 3 days in the desert, that's not really what they're asking for. They're really asking to be emancipated. So, like, what's this whole seeming subterfuge that's going on over here? So, in Perek Gimel Pasuk Yud Ches, Rabbi Yaakov, in the Sefer Emes Li Yaakov on Chumash, deals directly with this question and presents a very interesting answer. Just to read a little bit from Rabbi Yaakov. L'chara hadavar masmiya shiyavu moshev yedaber b'shem Hashem mashlo ola al daito. It seems astounding that Moshe Rabbeinu would go to Paro and say in the name of Hashem, make a request, which is not the real request. Varechosamo shalakodesh baruch hu emes. The seal of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is truth, is integrity. So this seems to be a sort of lack of integrity that is surrounding this whole story. So he writes the following. Mashanira li bozehu, says Rabbi Yaakov, to understand this issue, we have to consider the following. As we referenced even last week in talking about the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, there's a basic question about the chronology, the amount of years that Klal Yisrael spent in Egypt. On the one hand, the pasuk by the Bris Ben Absarim says that the Jews are condemned to be slaves in a land which is not theirs for 400 years. The Pasuk says when Klal Yisrael left Mitzrayim, we read it last week in Parshas Bo, the simple reading of the Pasuk is that Klal Yisrael were there for 430 years. And yet we know, so the tradition we have from Chazal is they were actually there 210 years. So how do we get from 400 to 210? That's a little bit of fuzzy math. Well, you know, you have to calculate the 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak and the 430 years from the Bris Ben Absarim. Why is this so complicated, right? Why can't you just say, you know, why can't the Bris Ben Absarim just tell, you know, why can't Avraham Avinu just be told, you're going to be in Egypt for 210 years? It's 210 years, but it's really 400. It's really 430. Like, what's going on over here? So he quotes a Medrash in Shir HaShirim, where the Medrash says as follows. Ki lo hoysa mitchila kavana limnos misha shenolad Yitzchak. Ela shedileg HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Avraham Avinu by the Bris Ben Absarim, and he said that your children are going to be in Egypt for 400 years, the original intent was that they would be there for 400 years. It's not that he said they'll be there for 400 years, which really means 210. They'll be there for 400 years. So why weren't they there for 400 years? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that the Jewish people were sinking spiritually while they were in Egypt. Had they stayed the full number of 400 years, so they would have disappeared spiritually. In other words, you know, they wouldn't have been able to make it, they wouldn't have been Jewish people by the time it came time to take them out. So on the one hand, HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to take them out before 400 years. But on the other hand, he had promised Avraham Avinu that they're going to be in Egypt for 400 years. So basically, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it were, cooked the books. In other words, he reinterpreted what 400 meant. You know, 400 means 400 years since the birth of Yitzchak. That wasn't the original intention. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, went back and changed the plan, but he changed the plan in a way that it was still literally true within a certain interpretation of the 400 years. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medaleg al cheshbonos. He's jumping over the original calculations with regard to them. So he writes as follows. With that in mind, he writes as follows. V'kosvu akadmonim, shahechrech lizdareis hoyo shilmalei ken hoyu mishtakin b'mitzrayim la'olam. The impetus, as we said before, to speed up the exodus from Egypt, to have them leave before 400 years, is that if they would have stayed more than the 210, the spiritual wasteland that was Egypt would have pulled them down to a point where they wouldn't have been able to leave. Ulefikach kasher avru kimosayim v'teisha shonim al cheshbon adalid meos v'rod Hashem she'enam yecholim lishtau sach sof hazman ki achar kach lo yetzu chafetz Hashem she'yelchu lizman kotzar lochug bamidbar.
V'shom hayu me'orim bekirbom ikrei ha'emuna shekiblu me'avuseyem.
Originally, says Rabbi Yaakov, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu saw that the Jewish people spiritually wouldn't be able to make it to the end of the 400 years, the original plan was not to start cooking the books. I mean, again, 400, which really means 210, that's very complicated. The original plan was, let the Jewish people experience a Shabbaton. A Shabbaton will give them an infusion of spirituality, and that infusion of spirituality will then give them the koach, the spiritual strength, to be able to make it to the end of the 400 years. The original plan was, let them go for 3 days in the desert and bring karbanos, and that will lift them up spiritually, and that will get them high enough that they'll be able to stay in Mitzrayim, not just 210 years, but they'll be able to make it for another 190 years till the end of the 400. Certainly HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted, whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbon was in saying that they should be in Mitzrayim for 400 years, he wanted them to be there for 400 years, but he didn't want them to disappear. So you know what, if there's a Shabbaton, we know from our own experience, sometimes you're in a, you know, not such a good state spiritually, you have a very uplifting spiritual experience, and, you know, that can give you the koach, you know, recharge the batteries to be able to keep going for a long time thereafter. So the original request to Paro was indeed not as a subterfuge. Genuinely, Moshe Rabbeinu went to Paro and said, look, 3 days in the desert, 3 days in the desert, 3 days in the desert, we need to recharge. Paro refuses. And ultimately, Moshe Rabbeinu says, look, okay, if you're going to refuse and not allow them to recharge their batteries, so the only other option is to leave Mitzrayim. Because if they, ironically, had Paro agreed to let them go 3 days into the desert, recharge their batteries spiritually, so then, actually, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perspective, they really could have come back to Mitzrayim, finished off the last of the 400 years, and Paro would have been happy. The Jews wouldn't have been so happy, but it would have worked out well enough. But because he didn't let them go and have those 3 days, so the only other option spiritually to maintain the spirituality of the Jewish people is to take them out of Mitzrayim. So it's not as if the Ribbono Shel Olam or Moshe Aaron changed the plan. The plan changed in response to Paro's own response. Very, very fascinating idea from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetz.
Very hard to fit that into the Chumash itself.
Why do you say that?
Because Baruch Hu first needs to know, he's saying, you know, you're going to take the man of Eretz Yisrael, right?
He would have had Arichas Yomim. I mean, he would have lived a long time, you know, with all of that. But that's you have to think about it because it's different. So Rabbi Kramer takes this idea from Rabbi Yaakov and he applies it to Dasan Aviro. So he says as follows, very, very creatively. It's not that Dasan Aviro fundamentally didn't believe in a geula. It's not that they didn't believe in a redemption. The 80% who died during Makas Choshech didn't believe that they were going to be redeemed at all. That wasn't the position of Dasan and Aviram. Dasan and Aviram were literalists. They said, the Ribbono Shel Olam said by the Bris Bein Habsarim, 400 years? What are you messing around with the 400 years? Right? So they realize that Moshe Rabbeinu was taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim and they're not coming back. They say, wait a minute, that wasn't the promise that was made to Avraham Avinu. We're sticking around. We've got another 190 years on the clock. But we believe in the Geula. It's not like those other 80% of the Jewish people that didn't believe in the Geula altogether. We believe in the Geula. We just think you're rushing things. You know, and they didn't buy in. They bought in to the Arba Meos Shana, but they didn't buy into the revision of the Arba Meos Shana to make it 210 years. Very, very fascinating, creative way of addressing this idea in the Yonasan Ben Uziel. Okay, we'll pick up tomorrow. Be'ezus Hashem, Chanan Ben Akasha Omer, Ratzah Kodesh Baruch Hu, Lezakos Es Yisrael.